Back to Racing Pulse live from the Trainers' Tower at Caulfield. And as we've been doing each day this week, we've been getting a couple of the local legends to join us and relive their best moments and some of the funny tales. And in this Trainers' Tower, there's been a lot go on in the history of this great race course. And Clint McDonald and Darren Gauchy are two of the most central figures, especially in the last couple of decades anyway, here at Caulfield. It's great to have you both here. How are you, gents?
Very well, thanks, Michael.
Yeah, well, thanks, Michael.
Does this bring back memories, Gouch, of all those years that you would have spent at Caulfield through rain, hail and shine?
Certainly does. Brings back a lot of memories. This is where it all started, not just for myself, but for my elder brother, Michael, and my younger brother, David. My elder brother, Michael, he was apprenticed here in the early 70s. And I think I started probably around about 78. I was 13 when our parents and family moved down from Caulfield, from Glenroy, sorry, to Caulfield. And I would ride work here in the morning, then go to school and come back in the afternoon. So that was our upbringing. Then my younger brother, David, he also got involved and got the bug. He wanted to start riding work and he started working in the stable. Unfortunately, he got too big, but because he got the bug, he wanted to stay involved in racing, and now he works for, since 18, and still is there now, Australian Trainer Association.
Really?
So, ATA.
That's amazing.
It's amazing, yeah.
And I know back in that era, Clinton, you guys were down at Epsom before you made the move to Caulfield, but what do you remember of the whiz kid Gouch?
Oh, he was a freak. I remember you used to see on all the news channels, you know, there was a fan club and all the young girls used to get out to Sandown and Caulfield and Flemington, and he was bigger than Texas back in those days. He was a real rock star for racing, and it probably really hadn't been seen, that fanfare about a jockey before.
Just on that, I found a funny little clip last night. I think we've got a little bit to play off. When you were at your absolute peak, I think you were just about to win, or you had just won the jockey premiership as an apprentice, and you were on the Don Lane show. Have a listen to this.
Okay, now, tell me about your hero. Who's your favourite hero in racing? Who would your favourite hero be?
Well, I always used to watch Roy Higgins ride. He used to be my favourite to watch.
Have you met Roy? Has he ever given you any advice or anything?
Yes, he has a few times given me advice, and, you know, just to watch him is good enough.
Uh-huh. He's your idol, huh?
Yes, he is.
Okay. Well, I wanted to bring him out here. You mind if I bring him out here? he doesn't know he's here. Will you say hello to Roy Higgins, only one of the greatest, right here.
That's magnificent. I think that must have been, what, about 1983 or 4 or something like that, was it? When did you win the premiership?
83.
And Don Lane, like that's, we're talking Bert Newton, Don Lane, the biggest show in Australia, and there's the young apprentice. Unbelievable.
Sounded like an 8-year-old.
I think I was about 17. Yeah.
Late bloomer.
It doesn't sound like me.
No, unbelievable. But yeah, well, that was always the young talent time and where you met your wife and everything like that as well. So you transcended racing back in the day, but as you said, it was all because of Caulfield and your brother, and then you were here with the king of the kids, Frank King as well.
Yeah. Well, I started off, when I first started, it was actually with Don Shannon. That's before I actually signed up as an apprentice, and because I was still going to school at the time. And Don Shannon gave up training and went to Manila. And at that time, Frank King had a really good apprentice, Dale Short, at the time, and he finished his time. He was out of his time, so he had a spare spot for me to take over. And it just worked out. The timing was perfect. And he was a great master. I couldn't have asked for a better boss. He was hard but very fair and kept me on a straight and narrow anyway. The more winners I rode, the harder it made me work, so I was too tired to do anything else.
Different era, wasn't it, Clinton, for the young jockeys coming through the ranks? And, I mean, your old man Ross would have had plenty of young up-and-coming stars that were riding for him and yourself over the years as well.
Yeah, definitely. Dad had a lot of apprentices back in the day, and it was a lot different story back then. You know, the apprentices used to work on Sunday mornings and muck out boxes. Now, the apprentices get around like little rock stars driving Mercs, you know. So, different times, and but these days now, Racing Victoria got a great program in place for the apprentices, and it's all going forward.
Your dad had such a great association with Caulfield even before when he moved here full time, winning those Caulfield Cups with Tris Stark and Impazira. But when you moved here full time, for you, what was it like growing Well, you're already a young man, but spending the majority of your life out here at Caulfield.
Well, it's been fantastic. It was a sad day when we had to leave Epsom, but times move on. And when we came here, it took us a little while to settle in. But, my father had a lot of success here. He won all the majors here, won the Blue Diamond and the Caulfield Cup a couple of times and the Caulfield Guineas. I think the only race he didn't win here was the 1,000 Guineas of the Group 1s. You know, he won the Oakley Plate as well. We've had a lot of good memories here, and it'll be a sad day to leave, but you've got to keep moving forward. And the main thing here, I think, was the trainers. We've had so many great trainers here, and the camaraderie between all of us has been terrific.
Your dad was larger than life, literally, and I know he used to get people back and have beers at the stable complex as well after a big win, even after a loss as well. So was it that kind of mateship and friendship that made Caulfield maybe a little bit different to other training centres?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, there's only the one trainers tower here, so we all have to get in here, and there's no chance of getting a big head at all because you'll get shot right down. So I just think it was a great leveller, and we never stopped learning off each other. And you know, you'd see someone do a piece of work with a horse and you go, geez, that's a good idea, and you might try it yourself. And it was just a good group of people that got along well. We'd done a lot of lunches together and just had a lot of good times, you know, a lot of laughs. You got to remember, you're with these guys probably 6 hours every day, early in the morning, you're around each other. So you're spending a lot of time with these people, and you actually, you grow fond and you make good friendships.
Did you ride much for Ross back in the day, Gouge?
Yeah, I had a few rides. We had a bit of luck, rode a few winners for Ross. He also tried to kill me one day. He took me out in the boat fishing, and he beat me in a Caulfield Cup. By a margin, it took about 20 minutes for the photo finish to come up. That was Impazera.
Yeah, that's
Congressman,
correct.
Congressman,
it?
Yeah.
So tell us about the boat story.
Well, they talked me into going fishing, and
you'd been rubbed out, hadn't you?
Yeah. You're probably better off telling the story.
So he'd been rubbed out. I think it might have been dropping your hands, I think, or something like that. You got rubbed out. You're a bit flat. So Dad rang him and said, "Come on, I'll take you out fishing." So we take the boat out, leave at 5 a.m. And we're going everywhere around Port Phillip Bay, and the old man was a lunatic, beer in the hand. You know, I was only a kid. Gouch was a bit older than me. And so then we start fishing in the middle of the heads, and Dad drops anchor, and we're looking down, catching all these fish, and they just kept getting in the boat. And then we looked up, and about 100 metres, 150 metres away, there's this big cargo ship boring down on us, right? And we're trying to get the anchor up, and the anchor wouldn't come up. So it's getting closer and closer, and we thought we're all going to die. We ended up getting it going, and the boat took off. So then Dad decided to take the boat out through the heads, out into the ocean. The swell was like 30 foot high. We're going up and down. And I remember Gouch saying to the old man, "Do you really think we need to be out here, Ross?"
I've never been the same since. Never got on a boat since.
He was fearless. He was fearless from the punt as well. And we'll talk about the hustler days in a moment. But let's relive his two big Caulfield Cups. Have a listen to Tristark and Impazera.
Rising Prince and Tristark together now. They're followed by Lack of Reason and Our Sophia. Halfway down the straight, Tristark is the leader. The Filbert getting out late. Tristark in front from Lack of Reason and Our Sophia and the Filbert. Tristark the leader. Our Sophia grabbing it on the line, but Tristark.
Impazera's raced up to join Orthal with 100 to go. Here comes Congressman on the outside. Impazera the leader, about a length to Orthal. Congressman finishing well. Impazera in front. Congressman comes home the best. Oh, this is close. Impazera or Congressman, they've hit it in a photo. Might be Impazera.
Sorry to make you relive that again, Gouch.
Thanks.
Did you think you'd won?
I thought I did.
Did you?
Actually, the late Graham Salisbury, the clerk of the course, was right near the winning post. And I said to him, "What did you think?" And he goes, "I like to be sure it's winning touch lotto that you got up." And when it went to a developed print, I thought, "I hope it's a dead heat." But it went against us. They beat me again.
They beat you again. Do you remember that vividly, those Caulfield Cups?
I do indeed. We ran her in the Epsom, and she got beaten in the developed print in the Epsom. And Dad had backed her for the Epsom in the Caulfield Cup double. And then she came down here and ran the week before in the Caulfield Stakes. Malcolm Johnson rode her, pulled her head off and ran last. And Malcolm said, "No, I'm not coming down to ride it for the Caulfield Cup. I can't win." So that's how they ended up finding Brian York, who was actually in Queensland, was leading rider up there. And they searched everywhere. And Dad actually took Brian York across to Lord Lodge and showed him the replays and said, "This is not a 50-to-1 chance. Ride it right and it can win." And the rest was history. He gave it a peach of a ride, sat in the box seat, went around one horse and won by a bee's dick.
Did your dad have a bet? Because he liked having a bet, your dad.
Yeah, he did like having a bet. He was no good at it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, shocking. He backed Hustler twice. He got beat twice. So
he was telling everyone to put their house
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you talk a big game. But dad liked to have a bet. You know, he'd have a good bet, but he wasn't a punter. He wasn't a lunatic like myself. But, I remember he backed Hustler. His first start at Sale. He thought this thing was unbeatable. And he gave him one trial here. And he said, I'm not trialing him again. I don't want anyone to see him. I said, Dad, you need to trial it again. Nope, I want to get a price. So he took it to Sale. The horse had no idea what it was doing. Ran fourth, beat in the length, sat three wide, ears like that. And he came home with he had the shits, the old man. He came home, he said to Les Beer, he said, when you gallop it next time, give it a smack around the arse and make this thing find the line. Well, Les hit it around the arse at the 400 and it put eight on the thing it was working with. And I said to my mates, my old man's got a superstar. And they ended up betting 8-1 at Cranbourne. It's next start. That's when AI hit. So, and he didn't have a bet.
I was going to ask you, when's the morning, especially with a Hustler, that you and your old man looked at each other and said, whoa, what have we got here?
We knew as a two-year-old. We were trying to get him ready for the Blue Diamond Golden Slipper. It was quite incredible because we had him in from the autumn and he stayed all the way into the stable till he ran into the Caulfield Guineas in the Coolmore. He never went to the paddock. He kept going bone sore and he was a colt then, and Dad and I would argue about gelding him, and I got him on a weak moment once, and I'll never forget it. And I said, Dad, we've got to geld this horse, otherwise we won't get into races. And he said, right, do what you want. So I rang the vet, I said, get in now and geld this horse before he changes his mind. And we gelded him, and then he went on to do what he did in that spring, which was just amazing.
And are the rumours and the stories true that you got about 60-1 him to win the Guineas?
Yeah, 66-1. I was at Mornington Races, and I'd had a winner down there, and I rang the owner and said, John Barth, actually, and I said, the odds come out today. I said, I'll meet you at the Bentley TAB. And I told him, I think I said the next day, but I went down there at 6 o'clock at night. And I said to the wife, I said, give me some cash. So she gave me 4,000. Went down, I fed it through. And I come home and I put it, the kids have made a paper mache chicken. And I put the tickets in there. I said, this will be the chicken that lays the golden egg. That's later on it did.
So you had the tickets in your hand?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gee whiz. Yeah. I'm glad they didn't get lost.
Sat on the fridge for about 2 months, I reckon.
Gee whiz. And well, let's relive, because it was one of the great Caulfield Guineas wins and one of the great moments here at the Heath, the Hustler winning the Guineas.
He has dashed away Weekend Hustler by 2 to Scenic Blast with 150 to go. Then further back marching, getting out and running home well. But a new star emerges. Weekend Hustler is brilliant in the Guineas. Weekend Hustler wins by 2 lengths to Scenic Blast. Second, third marching, fourth DAFCON.
He was just so dominant. That day, were you just so confident that you didn't have nerves, or you had the cash riding on it and the anticipation and the build-up?
He was just unbeatable. To be honest, he'd won at Cranbourne, then Dad took him to Sandown. He sort of went a different path to the normal Caulfield Guineas horses. He went to Sandown. And I remember John Sadler saying he had a horse for Lloyd and they thought it would win. I forget the name of a chestnut horse. And Steve Yarnell said, I was bolting coming to the turn. He said, I looked up and here's this thing eight in front. He said, I just couldn't believe it, you know. And he was just a horse that was just he was probably a great miler, but everything he did, he showed us that he'd probably get over ground. His pedigree suggested he'd get over ground. The way he went, we thought he'd get over ground. A little bit like a Shaftesbury Avenue, you know. Shaftesbury Avenue was probably one of the best horses we've had. He could do anything over 1,000 metres or over 2,400. I think he got beat in the Japan Cup, didn't he, Shaftesbury Avenue, you know. So we thought he was that type of horse. But in saying that, the best thing was the old man wasn't on the planet for too much longer, and he got great enjoyment out of it.
Absolutely. It's funny you mentioned Shaftesbury Avenue, because you had one of your great moments here at Caulfield on Shaftesbury Avenue, and your other great moment was in the Caulfield Guineas. Let's have a listen to Lonro and Shaftesbury with the Gouch on board.
They're across the track, Pure Theatre and Lonro. Ockie's little boy's taken the lead, Lonro, and pulls away to win the Guineas. It's Lonro first, Ustinov flashing home for second.
Shaftesbury Avenue, clear of Citizen, down the outside, flying home, Superimposer, down past the 200-metre mark, Shaftesbury Avenue on the inside from Dr. Gray, Superimposer and Citizen, but it's Shaftesbury Avenue in front with 100 metres left to go. He'll be too good, Shaftesbury. Shaftesbury Avenue by 2 lengths to Superimposer.
That was when we had the most ridiculous group of Wait for H stars. Just listen to the horses behind Shaftesbury Avenue in that race. Was he one of the best you ever rode, Gouch?
He certainly was one of the best. Actually, the best horse ever rode was in that race. Superimposed. But I remember that day here at Caulfield. First time I rode Shaftesbury Avenue, and the plan was to go forward and let him roll, and he just kept building up and building up, and the more pressure I put him under, the more he responded. And like you said, the horses behind him, the Wait for Age horses and the calibre that we had then, it's a bit different to what we have today, and they were really good Wait for Age horses in that era.
Unbelievable. And What was it like riding for the likes of Bart, and then when you had FBI flying at the moment, at the time as well, when you were the go-to jockey of your era? That was probably towards maybe the more middle or back end of your part, to be having those rides on those superstar horses as well.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I've been fortunate enough and to ride horses of the likes of Superimpose, Shaftesbury Avenue, Long Row, just to name a few. So you know when you get on a good horse and you appreciate it. Like my last one I really got on was a horse called El Secondo.
Yeah.
They're just great horses, and that's what every trainer and every jockey, that's what gets them out of bed and something to look forward to.
You mentioned El Segundo. We had Colin Little on yesterday.
Yeah.
And he was the last highlight horse that you had, but he was also a heartbreak horse for you, because Colin told the story about the day that he had to sack you.
Yeah.
And have a listen to this, and then I'll ask you about it.
Like, it was a terrible thing for all of us. Devastated Gaucho, I know. And Gaucho, I think, his birthday is maybe the 26th of December, and they told me about the 22nd of December. And Gouch was here all the time writing work, and I just had to tell him. I couldn't tell him Christmas Day. I couldn't tell him on his birthday, and I think I told him.
Was it first up in the William Reid? Was that the change of jockey?
Well, it was the end of the program.
Yeah, right.
End of the horse's campaign, and they had a meeting, and they just told me they decided to change jockeys. I mean, they only pay all the money, and they got heavily criticised, but, I mean...
Did you say to Gouch, here's Andy Evans' number, can you give him a ring?
Well, look, he actually punched the brick wall. Gouch just turned away and punched the brick wall as hard as he could.
Mm.
And I'm sure it devastated him. But the man he is, they all tell me in the jockey's room, he jumped up on the bench when the horse won the Cox Plate and he cheered at home.
Really?
And that's the man he is.
Is that right? Did you do that, Gouch?
I did cheer the horse home, yeah. I always wanted him to... I was happy he would win a Cox Plate, and I thought that would be the year. I said he's a little bit more mature. He had a long preparation when he ran the first time he ran in the Cox Plate. He was an amazing horse, and I just knew that next season he would be better.
Mm.
And I was so happy for him. I was happy for Luke Nolan and also for Colin, who'd done a fantastic job for the horse right throughout his career.
How's your hand? Did you punch that brick wall?
Oh, I had the boxing gloves on.
Oh.
Had a bit of packing around.
How did Roscoe go when he had a sack of jockey?
I can remember clear as day. It was after Tristark won the Caulfield Cup, and Nick's no longer here, so I can tell the story. And Smokey had been on the drink with Dad, and I was down at Morning Star, and Smokey was poking Dad, you know, where's my sling, where's my sling? So Dad, with a barrel full of beer in him, took him down the Rose Garden and said to Nick, yeah, you got to sling the jockey before the Melbourne Cup and that. And they ended up having a scruff. I remember Dad ripping the handles off the Caulfield Cup and throwing it up in the pine bush.
What?
There's about 300 guests there looking at this fight going on in the Rose Garden down at Morning Star. So that's all right. And Nick ended up taking the horses off us, and Smokey went to Sydney and kept riding them. So Dad said, never again will I fight for a jockey.
Unbelievable. Some great stories that don't get told back in those days. Another one has to do with Smokey Truller, wasn't it, just before the Caulfield Cup? And I remember Nick Collamine did an interview with him before he sadly passed away, that these days the jockey probably would never have ridden the horse. Tell the listeners what the issue was.
Oh, I was only a young kid, but obviously you hear all this stuff, but he'd stood on a nail, I think. He was a mad gardener, Wayne. Loved his gardens, and he was a real green thumb. And I think he stood on a nail, and he had an infected foot, and he couldn't get his boot on. And Dad went around there as he did. He said, yeah, let me see what I can get it on. So Roscoe, with his big hands, just pulled the boot on as Smokey's yelling. But the mail is that Smoke come in, he was out of it, you know. And Tristark was a wonderful mare, but yeah, she needed a lot of riding. I think, you know, the way he used to ride was sort of pull her out the half mile and start pulling the shillelagh and go for home, and that's what he did, you know. And I remember he sort of cruised past our Severe at the 400, and I think she only won by a short half head as well. So but they reckon Smokey was gone. You know, he had blood poisoning and all that. So they didn't go out that night. They ended up going back to Smokey's, put him to bed, and partied at Wayne Treloar's with Dodge.
Unbelievable stories. Hey, I'm with Gouch, Darren Gouchy and Clinton McDonald. We're live sitting in the middle of the trainers' tower. It's all empty except for us, which is what it will be in a few days' time as well, reliving some great moments from the Heath and some of the people who have played the biggest part in this training complex as well. We'll take a quick break. It is 9:23. More stories to come.
including it was all Clinton McDonald that turned around the superstar Northerly. We'll hear that story after the break as well.
With Dalzio, Regal Roller in front, Maccabi Diva with a late run on the inside, but Regal Roller wins three lengths. Second Pacific Dancer, third's either Maccabi Diva or Dalzio.
Well, that was Regal Roller absolutely demolishing a horse called Maccabi Diva in the 2004 Mimsy Stakes. Good memories for you, Clinton. Gee, he was a star here at Caulfield.
He was a great horse for me. I probably didn't appreciate it at the time. I was very young and just, I'd only been training a couple of years, and to get a horse like that, you just thought, how easy is this? You know, is this what's going to happen? But he was a horse that set us up, and he brought our family home, and he was just a great punting horse.
I was going to say, early in your training career, were you fearless on the punt then?
Yeah, fearless, ridiculous fearless, you know, so I scare myself now thinking back about it. But Brian Durren, the owner, Brian and Joan Durren, they loved to bet. And Brian used to virtually come in with a case and fill it up with cash, and then he couldn't put in there, they'd give him a check to put on top, you know, and then he'd walk out with a smile, you know. And it was just crazy times. I sort of just kept betting as much as you could, and they kept giving us odds.
So, like, what price was he in that Memsy, and was that one of your biggest wins?
It was a big win. I just kept going all up. We'd had Tarney Girl win the McNeil, and I backed it, and then I went all up into Regal Roller. Yeah, and I'll never forget it. I shouldn't say it on radio, but we'd had a few drinks, and I backed Flaherty in the last, Sparrow in the last, on the thing of Mayfield Smith's, and it got up at $18, and I had a couple of grand each way on it. And then there was a protest, so I thought, I'll run down and tell them not to protest. It was upheld, ran second, but I thought, how good's this? But no, we had some great times, and, you know, being young then, young and stupid, and, we won, done all the work and got the horse right, but then we'd have a really good time after it as well.
Gatch, back in your day, did you know if, because you were on all the favourites back in the day, did you know if people were having a good bet? Did they tell the jockeys back then, hey, just letting you know the money's on today?
Yeah, that happened quite often. The trainer said, we're having a go today. No pressure, but we're having a go. We're having a good crack. And if the horse doesn't win, I'll probably finish as a trainer.
I think that happened with John Sadler,
yeah,
didn't
that,
it?
Exactly, yeah, exactly right. Was that Preston's choice?
Yeah, Preston's choice. He still tells that story.
So, well, Sad said that too.
Yeah, and actually the horse wasn't going that great at the time, and I remember it was at Flemington. I was riding work, and John was at Flemington, and he yelled out, would you want to go and ride that horse in the Hamilton Cup? You don't have to if you don't want to, but I want you to go. I said, okay, of course I do. You know, I rode horse right through, and we flew up. He did not say a word in the plane, John. Not a word.
He bet his stables, get his stables. That's how he paid for his stables.
Yeah, and I thought, well, something's going on here, because he's got two ABBA runners that I don't know I've never been on before. And I thought, maybe he likes one of those ABBA runners or whatever. Rode them first before the cup. They ran 4/5, ran average. So had about an hour's wait in the jockey's room before the Hamilton Cup. John walks in. The middle of winter, he was sweating. I've never seen him smoke before. He had a cigarette in his hand. He sat down, I just want to talk to you. He said, listen, I don't want to put any pressure on you at all. I don't want, you know, no pressure at all. He said, but if this horse doesn't win today, I'm finished as a trainer. I've had my last on it.
And what was your response?
I rang Gouch, went to water.
I went to water. I did.
Was it a good ride?
Well, I drew sort of wide. And I thought, well, it's not a real long run to the first turn, and I sort of had to get across to one off the fence, and I managed to do that. And then at the bet to 700, I felt like, actually, it's not going that good.
I'm thinking of John Sadler here.
I thought, I don't get that good. I don't get that great feel I usually get from this horse at the 700 metre mark, and I give him a slap, and he went boom. He just picked up and sort of actually nearly got there too soon. And then in the straight, there was one coming down the outside. It did get past me for a couple of strides, but he fought back and won. And it felt like the weight of my shoulder, you know, the weight of the world was off my shoulders once I went past the winning post first.
And what was it like when you came back to Sads?
Sads was at the bar.
He was still pale.
They are the stories that punters love hearing. A story that a lot of people probably don't know, Clinton, is that you were an integral part in getting Northerly to his win in the Cox Plate here, and he was known as a bit of a quirky horse, and you helped turn it around.
Yeah, no, he was a horse that was here, and obviously he was a high-profile horse. He hadn't really reached the heights, but everyone, I think he'd won the Railway over in Perth, and he came here, and he was jacking up, and he wouldn't go around the track, and Dad was up in his mother's club, we used to call it, and Fred was up there, and they couldn't get him around the track, and Dad said to Fred, "Oh, you know, you need someone to get on there and get that horse going." He said, "Well, we don't really have anyone," and Dad said, "Well, I've got someone." So it was a Sunday morning, he walked in with the horse, and he said, "Here's the horse, if you don't get him going in a couple of weeks, I'm taking him back home." So I rode him every morning and got him going, and Ollie jumped on him the Tuesday before the Caulfield Stakes, and he worked with a horse called Umrum. And I said, "Ollie, how was he?" I said, "You know, I told him what he had to do on him," and he said it's the first time he felt like a Group 1 horse. You know, and he beat Umrum by two or three lengths. So once again, being a young, enthusiastic punter, we unloaded into Caulfield Stakes, and I think he won by three or four lengths, and then he went on and he won that famous Cox Plate with Sunline and Viscount. But he's a horse that used to have to ride with a certain hold, and you know, as Ollie does when he gets, you know, strong on him and desperate, he likes to cross his reins. And when he used to do that, that's when the horse used to float. He used to have to keep a tight hold on him, tight rein, and that's why Greg Childs and that got along well with him, because he's sort of that shorter rein and kept a bit up in his mouth, and he seemed to go straighter for him. But he was an amazing horse. You know, I said to Fred, and I think it's one of Fred's biggest regrets, is that he didn't run him in the Melbourne Cup. I think he would have won a Melbourne Cup. But I played polo cross for a number of years, and he was one of the most balanced horses I ever sat on. You know, he's a really intelligent horse. He thought he was the boss, and you had to sort of, you know, rule that out of him. And once he understood who was in charge, he was just a beautiful horse to ride.
Did you have horses like that, Gouch, that the moment you sit on them, you go, "Oh, this is an A-grader"? And going back to your younger days, when you were riding here for Jeff Murphy and Angus Armanasco as well, what was it like getting on those horses and those trainers? Did they train different to this day and age?
They train a little bit different to this day and age. Things change, of course, as over the years, I've seen anyway. With most of the best horses I've rode, as soon as you get on them, you know. And on the other hand, there's been some really good horses that I've rode. For instance, El Secundo, when I rode him here the first morning. And I just come back from injury, I broke my back, and Colin says, "Oh, Freya, you want a good horse to ride, work to start you off, just slow work," and he's a quiet horse. And I cantered one lap around this track, and cantering, and I thought, "What's Colin on about? This is a good horse. Feels like it's got six legs. Feels very average." But the faster he went, got up to even time, then a full gallop, and a wow. And then I realised how good he was. It just gives you a totally different feel. They run fast time on the clock, and
don't look like doing it.
You don't think they're going that quick. You know, they're very tricky to ride. You sort of got to make out that you sort of feel like you're going slower because they're actually running time.
Yeah.
That's what good horses do.
What was it, we were talking to Colin Little yesterday about Angus Armanasco, Jeff Murphy era here as well. What was it like when you were working and riding for Murph? I think you finished second in a Melbourne Cup, didn't you, on Shagamar for him?
Yes, the first time I ran second was on Shagamar in the Melbourne Cup. Murph, I started riding for Murph. Jeff, he was a real character. I loved Jeff. His bark was worse than his bite. I remember the first time we actually thought a horse would run all right. I never forget the horse's name. It was a grey horse. I used to ride work every morning for him. A horse called La Ginza. The 1400 metre race here, and he put me on. I had not rode a winner in the metropolitan area at this stage. I've only just started off, sort of thing. And Jeff said to me on the way, he said, "Show him how good you can ride, son." He gave me instructions, was to lead or be outside the leader. And I jumped and I led. I think I may have just overdone it a bit and went a bit quick. And he gave me the biggest spray when I came in. And I thought, the next morning I'm going to have to front up my work and Jeff's going to give me another... I was a bit like, what do? So I just went and rode work, of course. And up on my last horse, walking back to the hut in the middle to talk to Jeff about how the horse worked, he said to me, "Where are you riding Saturday?" I said, "I haven't got a ride, Mr. Murphy." He goes, "Okay, you can ride Beach Gown."
Yeah.
At Flemington. And that was one of his good horses, real good horses. And from then on, we just kicked. And I rode, that's when he had the horses such as Shannon Mist, Albany Bay, and all those types. And he had a good era, good season of three-year-olds. And I was riding all of them. And we had a great association.
Unbelievable. And Clinton, you came a little bit later, obviously, but the era of great trainers that have stood in this tower. I asked Colin yesterday, who's obviously been around a bit longer, but who do you think's the most talented trainer that you've stood next to here in the tower?
Oh, the most talented trainer, there's a number of them. Peter Moody was unbelievable. Mick Price, you know, he's a very businessman-like, and I love Mick. I've known Mick from the Epsom days, and, you know, his record's second to none. Colin Little, obviously, with a smaller stable. John Sadler, you know, fantastic at setting one up and having a bet. And, you know, he's an old-fashioned trainer. That's what the racing game used to be about, was the punt, you know, and trying to get a dollar out of it. So he's the old-fashioned trainer, Sads. And, yeah, you've had plenty of trainers through. Brendan McCarthy had Regal Shot and had a number of good horses. And then, obviously, you've got the guys that have already moved. So, obviously, what Peter did with Black Caviar, you know, we were lucky enough to see that mare every day here, and you know, he used to tell us the stories of, you know, the problems she'd have, feet troubles and all that type of stuff, but he was able to master it and get her to win 25 races. And also Traveller, and you know, I remember when he ran her over the 7 furlongs. Like, I would have loved to have seen her run over 7 furlongs, because she was just absolutely devastating that day. And then to drop her back to 1,000 within a week, that's a training performance, you know. And obviously you've got to have the motor car to do it, but to keep it sound and to keep her intact, I thought it was probably one of the best training performances I've seen. And, you know, what I saw the old man do with a little number of horses, you know, Dad only ever had 30 horses, and to win, say, 30-odd group ones, and win all the majors, you know, he won a Slipper and he won a Blue Diamond, yeah, that was a great train. So trainers that are only as good as the stock they've got, and I think, you know, there's a number of... There's some great trainers in Victoria and around Australia, and you know, here we've been very fortunate. You know, you talk about Jeff Murphy. I remember when I first started breaking in, Mum went up and said to him, "Oh, I clinched just, I was only 16. Well, and he starts swearing at Margaret, you know, using every curse word, to tell him there was so-and-so to come and ask himself. And I sort of went up all, you know, all jittery, and yeah, that was the type of guy he was. And you know, my dad used to break in for Jeff Murphy when he first started out, and the stories of Jeff Murphy are legendary, you know. And those characters are gone, you know. You had Tosca Curtin here, and you know, Brian Ralph, and a number of trainers that you know, you hear the stories of when they used to travel, and that was great times for them.
Yeah, the history of this track, which will never be forgotten, and we look over to Lord Lodge now and where Cole is now, but the history of the horses and that have come through here as well. Do you think you'd like to see some permanent type of historical reminder here at Caulfield of what has been achieved by the trainers here?
Well, I think there should be something in sort of memory of everyone that's come through. You know, Angus Armanasco was such a pillar of our industry with the stallions that he created. Jeff Murphy. Yeah, you can go through even with the Freedmans being here, and there's been so many great trainers, so many good horses, and that's the thing. Like, if you look around and you listen to people like Gouch come off the street and his brothers come off the street, so that's where we had something very special here at Caulfield, because we're in a suburban area. You know, I know the amount of people that used to come past and pat the pony, young kids and that. And that's how you get them involved, not by banning the whip or anything like that. It's about teaching them about the horse, getting them to come in and feel the stable and see the horses and see how well cared they are. I think that needs to be pushed a lot more. And as for keeping the history of Caulfield, yeah, it's very important. Because I know with Epsom, once it's gone, it's gone. Yeah. You don't get it back, you know, and all those memories and all that history's gone.
You mentioned Black Caviar. We're going to have Moods in here tomorrow with Mick Price. I'm looking forward to some of those stories, especially, is it urban legend or did something get flown out of the window? I'll ask Moods at Trackwork one morning here tomorrow, but were you here that morning?
Yes, I was here. I've been here for a number of things. I've seen a couple of trainers have punch-ons here.
Really? Which,
yeah, that was quite interesting, that one. I saw two old men sort of rolling around on the ground. So that was an interesting morning. Then I have seen Moods do some stupid things, you know. Everyone thinks he's a very intelligent man, but that's yet to be seen.
Were you here the first morning that Black Caviar was unveiled and everyone just kind of went, whoa, what is this?
No, well, Moods is too sneaky for that. You know, he thinks he's the people's person, but he's not really. He never told us about it until it sort of stepped out. But that was the beauty about Caulfield. If you had a very good horse, a Black Caviar, a Weekend Hustler, or I'm Thunderstruck, the Melbourne Racing Club would give you the course proper, and then obviously everyone would see him. And she used to run times that were just in that up. You know, you'd sort of look at your watch and think, did I stuff that up? You know, she was just like a race car. Just put your foot down and away you went.
Yeah, unbelievable. Have you got, as we wrap up and say goodbye, any major memories of either track work or times here at Caulfield from back in the day? You didn't get any punch-ups with any young jocks, did you?
No, I didn't get too many problems, altercations like that when I was here. I've got a lot of good memories about Caulfield from when I started, from the first time I rode work. And like when I did start riding work, I was only 13, I was underage. And the stable jockey for the stable was Jeff Bamford at the time. And he was a mad Port Melbourne supporter. He used to wear a Port Melbourne jumper every day. So he just got off his horse one morning and just said, took his jumper off, put it on me. He said, they won't know the difference. There was a difference. It come down to my knees. I only weighed about 28 kilograms. But they're the sort of memories I have here. And you know, I've met some wonderful people here. It's sad to see it go. But, it's, you know, I'm sure we're just... a lot of people have got a lot of great memories anyway.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And it's been great too. Relive some of those memories here today and have a bit of a laugh about it as well. Gouch, you're a legend, and your next superstars of the turf are now where your focus is and bringing them through the ranks as well. So it's good to see that continue.
Yeah, they're going very well. Doing us proud.
Good on you, Gouch. And Clinton, it's been good to relive some of those tales, especially those punting tales. The SMS has absolutely lit up. They've loved the stories this morning. Is there one that you might be betting on in the next couple of weeks?
I'll let you know.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you will. Yeah. Clinton McDonald, Darren Gouchy, great to have them here live from the Caulfield Traders Tower. We'll take a break on the other side of this. Joshy Rotter, he'll give us the next two moments in his top 10 moments here from Caulfield, and then we'll look ahead to the TAB Melbourne Cup on Friday night.